Michael Steele podcast listeners, Michael Steele here with another quick take from the Michael Steele podcast. Check out what's going on right now.
We're having a fascinating discussion with the director of the Fellows Program at the Brennan Center for Justice. His new work, his debut work, his book, When the Stars Begin to Fall, Overcoming Racism and Renewing the Promise of America, is out now. We're talking with Theodore Ted Johnson. For Black people in particular, you turn a corner on page 76. you turn a corner where you say the Black American demand. And I love the power and the use of the word demand here, because it sticks. It's something that sticks in my craw, which you'll find out about in a second. The African-American, the Black American demand for full citizenship is a function of a burning desire for racial equality.
Right.
And for me, the demand piece is so important. What are we demanding in this relationship, in our understanding of the country we built? Okay, not the white man's understanding of America, but our understanding of the country we built. And that, for me, is that question centers on this one word, demand.
Yeah,
that feeds everything else. Equality, boom, boom, boom. Because you've got to demand it. And when I read that, I thought back on so many conversations with people over since George Floyd's death, in which that idea of demand was a big part of it. You could hear it, even though they weren't using the words, you could hear it in how they were saying, how they were talking about policing in the Black community, how they were talking about the economics in the Black community, the wage discrepancy, the healthcare discrepancies, the educational discrepancies, that the demand was, we tired of this shit. Okay. And they were ready, and their folks were ready to begin to link their history up with that demand.
Right.
And what was the white response? Well, the 1619 Project is a load of crap. That's not real history. When we started to tell our history through telling our history, if you will, the response was, well, that's not good. That's not a good academic study, or that's not a good academic thesis. And you know, they start throwing around the $15 words and trying to put it in the context of Harvard education and all this other bull. What does that say about the resistance to the demand? And the demand is equality. That's what, because that, you know, right. Once you have equality, then the rest of it kind of takes care of itself, right?
Right. So, The use of demand, you're right, it's completely intentional. And the first thing it does is this. Too many folks in the country think about the end of slavery as a gift to Black people. Lincoln freed the slaves. What else you want us to do? We gave you people your freedom.
That's always the first go-to. Well, you know, in the Republican Party, it's one of the first go-tos. Well, Lincoln freed the slaves. I'm like, right. Okay, all right, okay.
That Black people were passive in their own liberty. That's not true.
It's not
Black
true.
Been, right, but we have been agents in our independence, agents in our liberty from day one. And so the abolition and all the constitutional amendments that came after it were the product of Black work, along with the national interest and strong leaders, et cetera, et cetera. But Black people were not recipients of mercy and grace. We were active agents in snatching, demanding our liberty and our freedom.
Right.
And the same thing can be said during the civil rights movement. Any racial progress this country has seen, especially when it comes to Black folks, has not been a gift to Black folks, but has been the product of Black work.
Right.
And so where we are today is that demand is still being made for equality. Two things are happening. One, you already noted, is the backlash. Anytime folks make a demand on something and that demand is received and the world changes, there's backlash to that change, especially by those who feel like their life, their worldview, or whatever has been changed as a result without their permission or whatever.
Right.
But the other part of this is that when a people who were at the lower end of a spectrum or lower end of a hierarchy are suddenly told, we are going to make you equals, the folks at the upper end of the hierarchy see equality as a loss in social status.
That's exactly right.
The people they used to be better than are now their equals. And those folks that are now brought up feel better, but those folks who are now equals with everyone else feel like they have been brought down.
Zero sum. They think they've lost something.
Right. And that loss of social status is real. This is the same thing around nations. When people feel like their status is their reputation, all of these things are being questioned, they push back against that loss because they receive it just like it's a material loss, just like you burned down their home or you'd stolen their job. They see the loss of social status. And so all this economic anxiety, you know, white men are killing themselves at preposterous rate, committing suicide at the highest rates in the country right now. The opioid crisis hit parts of white America harder than anywhere else because that loss of status leads to despair and can lead to a receptiveness to othering other people that you can blame for your problems. Problems that you didn't necessarily create yourself, but problems that those people you're pointing at, they didn't create them either. Who did? A nation state, a government that is not responsive to what you're asking of it, to more affordable healthcare, to a safer community with, you know, where folks aren't mass shooting up left and right, a place where people don't have to worry about police abusing their power. The state doesn't have to deliver on any of those demands if they can grab folks by the shoulder and say, it's those people over there that are causing your dream, the promise of America, not to reach you. And you can either face them and get them out of the mix so we can create the country you want, or you can allow them to take it over. But government is powerless to do anything until you guys figure that out. And I think that's where the BS is. And this is where the call for national solidarity is, that people coming together over a just cause in order to hold the state accountable for being in breach of the social contract.
So you've just led perfectly to how we're going to wind down our conversation, because I got to let this brother get back to work and sell his book somewhere else, right? this has just been, I really hope people are really getting something out of this conversation, because I know I am on so many levels. You perfectly set up part three and part four of the book, the last half of the book, where you talk about a framework for national security, and you lead off that conversation with finding civil religion. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that? What is that? What do you mean by that? And how does that set up this national solidarity?
Right.
And then I've got one last question on the back end on that piece.
So civil religion, this isn't a new idea. This is as old as Jean-Jacques Rousseau from centuries ago, but was refreshed by the sociologist at Berkeley named Robert Bellum. And he basically says the way Americans express their civic pride has all the markings of a religion. There's a religious quality to it. Religions have gods and pantheons. Well, we've got our pantheon. You can go into Washington Mall and see our statues. So these pantheons, George Washington and Lincoln and Jefferson, Martin Luther King. Religions have rituals. Well, we've got ours, the national anthem, the flag, the Statue of Liberty, the Pledge of Allegiance. Well, religions have canon. Well, we've got ours, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence. And so all the things that make a religion, you can find in American civic life. So that's the first part. The second is that the only thing that connects all 330 million of us across lines of language, race, religion, customs, ethnicity, etc., is our belief in the American ideal, that we're all created equal and that we have these unalienable rights. And if that idea doesn't unite us, then nothing else does. What else makes us kin? What else makes us fellow citizens except for the fact that we say we believe in these principles? The American civil religion is how we demonstrate our desire to be included in a nation so oriented or so grounded in these principles, a nation that's always fallen short, a nation where the people have bickered over the meaning of the symbols and who's included and who isn't. But solidarity requires us to find some kind of commonality. And the book suggests, I suggest, that the American civil religion is the best place. The last little clause here, caveat, is that it's easily hijacked. And so the religious ethno-nationalism we saw at play on January 6th in the Capitol riots, that is a bigot, or that is a bastardized version of the civil religion. The kind of appeal we see where, trying to convince us that we're all fellow citizens and connected to one another, that's all BS. All we need are better laws and punish people when they break them. And we don't need to feel connected anything beyond just good law. That is also a bastardized version of the civil religion, because people don't feel connected based on laws. They don't feel connected based on material interest. They feel connected based on shared experiences. And so the civil religion is a tightrope to walk, but it is sturdy enough to make a thick kind of solidarity that we need.
So, Ted, is that why you say we should think about the United States and America as two separate things?
Right, right. Our connection is found in America. And now when we are connected in that way, we can compel the United States nation state to do what it is it's supposed to do. Remember, the Declaration says the government should derive its power from the consent of the governed.
Right.
And what folks are doing now is preventing the governed from giving their consent because we're pointing fingers at one another. And so in a real America where there's national solidarity, the governed give their consent. And it's so powerful that the nation state has to be responsive or declare itself to be a fraud, that we are not actually a place where government derives power from the consent of the governed, where those with power will do what they will, and to the exclusion or the peril of everyone else. So national solidarity helps us become that more perfect union, close the gap between U.S. and America.
And would it be ironic that the linchpin to that national solidarity is Black folks? And how does Black solidarity make national solidarity happen?
Yeah. And so the book argues that Black folks don't hold the only key. Black folks hold one of many keys. If you are Native American, you have lessons to teach the nation about how it can become better. If you are the child of immigrants, whether Eastern Europe or Southeast Asia, you have lessons. Your family story has lessons about how America can be better. The Black experience has a particular set of lessons that can show the nation how it can live up to its creed, live its creed, and close the distance between the who we are and who we say we are. And we've talked about some of those superlative citizenship and marrying moral claims with national interests and talking about how a people can find solidarity with one another even when they don't choose the group they belong to. Black folks didn't choose to be Black and then were born. We were born Black and found solidarity in the experience. And America can do all of those things. Americans can be superlative citizens and show the state that it's in breach of contract. Americans can understand that in order to become better, to live our ideals, we have to show the state that it's in its interest to do so. And Americans can understand that most of us did not self-select into this country. We were born into it. And so there is a solidarity of being American. If you've ever been overseas and landed back in a U.S. airport, you feel differently once you're on American soil, what color you are. And there is a connection there that too many of our leaders now are trying to bury in order to keep us divided and to yank power from the people instead of being responsive to the demands of the people that live up to its ideals. To most of the people, there are those who would rather see us divided, but the vast majority of us want America to work.
Damn, you're good. Ted Johnson, he's got a lesson for all of us in this. There's a lot to read, a lot to learn and understand here.
Thanks for listening to this quick take from the Michael Steele podcast. Now, we'll be back with a full show soon. But in the meantime, you can go to Apple Podcasts, review us, give us 5 stars. Yes, we like the 5-star rating. Or you can listen on Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, or wherever you get your podcast on. Catch you later, folks.
I'm sports psychologist Dr. Andrew Jacobs. I created the Sportsmanship Foundation to promote and educate parents and athletes about the role of good sportsmanship in our development. Learn more at winnersunlimited.com. That's winnersunlimited.com.
Everyone loses golf balls, even the pros. When you need golf balls, go to lostgolfballs.com, the world's largest inventory of used golf balls. All the top brands, in stock, 50% off retail. lostgolfballs.com.